The name of God, who we know to be love and who we call Jesus. You wouldn't know this unless you know me pretty well, but this week's lectionary readings deliver us my all-time favorite verse from the Bible, and I can't resist preaching on it this morning. But I do want to circle back around first to last Sunday just for a sec. If you were around here last week, and I know it's summer and we're not all around, and I hope you know that we don't take attendance here at St. John's Episcopal Church. So when you are not here on a Sunday morning, well, you're not here. And when you are here on a Sunday morning, we are just happy to see you. If you were around last Sunday, I hope you walked away with the understanding that we are in this together. You remember that the disciples were able to stick with Jesus when the work became new or weird or foreign or even challenging to them, the work of being a disciple. And that you and I, that all of us can stick together in this work of making a love-spreading difference in the world in response to our understanding of being the beloved of God. We can stick together in spite of the fact that we might have voted for different candidates for mayor. We can stick together in spite of the fact that we may be more blue than red or more red than blue. The work of following God is not conceptual or policy-driven. It's mission-driven. And love drives the mission. It's not hard for us to see that the world could use a little more love right now. We've lost scores this week to terror-driven violence, including one of our own from the town of Jackson. Our brothers and sisters on the Gulf Coast sit in the path of a terrible storm as we sit here comfortably in church. COVID continues its sweep across the globe. This is a worrisome time. It's not absent hope, but it's more worrisome than other eras in human history. In addition to all of that, it's our Stewardship Sunday, the Sunday where we make commitments of our resources to the mission and ministry of the church for the coming year. We commit resource, money, to this place, and that money that we commit is both God-given and hard-earned. These commitments we make for most of us affect our so-called bottom lines. When most of us give to this place, it means we aren't able to do other things that we might want to do. And I would not be able to ask you to give like that if I wasn't 100% committed and convinced that the work of this church makes this place, this town, this community, this broader Episcopal church, these people like us who come here, and many who never will, I wouldn't be able to ask you to give like this if I weren't completely convinced that the work is working. That because of what you do and what you give, people meet their God-given belovedness in beautiful and healing ways, here and there, out there, and right in here in church on Sunday mornings. By giving what you do, and I should say I am grateful for what you give, by giving what you do, I'm sure you miss out on some things. And I also know that you get the enormous privilege of joining the love work of God in this corner of creation. You become co-creators of God's love in the world. I have a sense that because of my role, that I get to see more of that love in action than you do. I find myself just about every single week, or sometimes more than once a week, responding to someone in our community, oh, don't thank me. Thank the good people of St. John's Episcopal Church. It is they who provided you with what you need. What a great gift you are to this community of Jackson Hole. We are in this together, that's for sure. And we make worrisome times more hopeful because of the love that we spread through the collective generosity of this place. There is no doubt that we are in this together. And I suppose that I have said that phrase enough last week and enough this week, that we're in this together, that there might be some of you who are wondering, in what together? What is this? What is this that we're in together? And that's a fair question, and I think it's an important question for churches, especially right now as we make our way forward in a time where church attendance and affiliation is declining, as if the work that we were about was ever about attendance or affiliation. That leads me back to this favorite verse of mine. I remember the first time I read it, at least for me, when I was paying attention. I was 21 years old, and I was thinking that I might like to go off to seminary and become an Episcopal priest, and I had decided that if I were going to do that I should probably spend some time in the Bible, that I should probably know something about the Bible. And I had been around the Episcopal Church since my high school years, and I had heard a lot of Bible, as we do when we come to the Episcopal Church, but I hadn't really read anything for me, hadn't really read anything on my own, you know. And I had attended a few Bible studies in high school, but honestly, I attended them because there were pretty girls there. And I had attended a few Bible studies in college, but mostly because at that particular time in my life, I was struggling pretty fiercely with depression, and I thought that Bible study might help that. It didn't, but therapy did, thanks be to God. And thanks to the therapists who have been my guide over these many years, these few decades, but back to Bible studying. So I was 21 years old, and I was thinking that I might want to go off to seminary and become a priest. A family friend had given me a Bible when I had graduated from high school, and I still had that Bible. I wasn't exactly sure where to start. I mean, just the book itself can be a little intimidating, right? There's gold around the edges of a lot of these things. I wasn't really exactly sure how or where to start a self-guided Bible study. So, and this is a little embarrassing to admit, but it's true. I didn't know where to start. So somewhat egotistically, I started with what? With James. I know. Wow. Hilarious, right? It's a little embarrassing, but that's where I started. So anyway, I'm reading through this first chapter of James, trying to, you know, be pious. And I come across this 22nd verse in the first chapter of James. I was reading the NIV translation, which reads, "Do not merely speak my words and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says." And James' words were so direct. They narrated in a transparent way what I had struggled with as an emerging Christian. What do we do with folks who say they are a Christian and don't act like they're Christian? This is about who and how we are in the world, not about what we say we believe in. This isn't about a signature or a pledge. It's not even about a ritual in a river or around a font. This is about how you and I live. It's about how we care for and nurture those in front of us and behind us and alongside us. And sometimes it's about how we care for or nurture those who are a long, long way off. It starts here for sure, and sometimes it stretches to the ends of the earth. But this is about how loving we are, not about what we say we believe. James says to us this morning and every day, be doers of the word, not merely hearers. Mark's Jesus says to us this morning, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Mark's Jesus and James, the brother of Jesus, are talking about a real problem that people like you and me encounter, a real struggle for people of faith. We can become captivated with the concepts of our religious faith or our religious practice, forgetting that these concepts are only here to propel us toward a life more devoted to love than anything else. This is not about believing. This is about living. Sometimes on days like today, I worry that your pledge could fall into that category, the concept category, the believing category. It might become a religious practice that you take up because you feel obligated to. Because you feel like you should. I fear that the practice of making a commitment to the church like this one could become accidentally detached from God's loving presence in our own lives and in the lives of those around us. We're just not close enough to the work of love when we put our name and a number down on a card. It can be awfully hard to see that the dollars you gave from your own generosity, from your own hard work, it can be awfully hard to see that some of those dollars were used to move snow in a parking lot at 5 a.m. in the morning on a snowy winter day. And that later that day, someone pulled into a parking space, feeling both anxious and sad. They carefully made their way along a sidewalk, one that was cleared with money you earned and money you gave. They made their way along a cleared sidewalk and into our church where family and friends were gathered together, saying prayers, that have been prayed on behalf of the dead for centuries. Singing songs that have been sung in order for some to feel some measure of comfort at a time of enormous loss and grief. I worry because a pledge card asks us to quantify something that is so qualitative. It's both impossible to put a price on love that is shared from this place at a time of grief or a time of great joy or every other time in between. And at the same time, we do make a budget and try to quantify what we might need in order to generously and joyfully spread love around this valley. It's complicated, isn't it? The work of being a love-spreading difference maker, it's complicated, and at the same time, it's simple. It's simple, but it ain't easy. The very first time I climbed into this pulpit 5 years ago, I told you that my hope, my vision for this church was attached to an image. That together we would cover this valley in love like snow covers it in the wintertime. I've repeated that vision to you. Gosh, I'm sorry. I'm so proud of the work that you've done that it's making me feel a little emotional this morning. I am so proud of the work that you have done that has begun to bring that vision into reality. I can say to you that 5 years later, that vision is attached to real things that you have done and that we've done together. Do not merely speak my words and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. You, y'all, we are doing it. That vision is no longer an idea. It's work that we're doing together. I mean to say, it's happening, church. It's happening. It's happening not necessarily because of what you believe, but because you're courageous enough and you're adventurous enough and you're generous enough and you're loving enough to give it a shot. You, y'all, we are making a love-spreading difference here. The love is beginning to pile up like the snow does. And we'll keep spreading it until it's deep and drifting. Amen.